Chapter 16. The German war being finished, Kaiser thought it expedient for him to cross the Rhine, for many reasons, of which this was the most weighty, that, since he saw the Germans were so easily urged to go into Gaul, he desired they should have their fears for their own territories when they discovered that the army of the Roman people both could and dared pass the Rhine. There was added also that that portion of the cavalry of the Usipetes and the Tencteri, which I have above related to have crossed the Meuse for the purpose of plundering and procuring forage, and was not present at the engagement, had betaken themselves, after the retreat of their countrymen, across the Rhine into the settlements of the Sigambri, and united themselves to them. When Kaiser sent ambassadors to them, to demand that they should give up to him those who had made war against him and against Gaul, they replied that the Rhine bounded the empire of the Roman people. If he did not think it just for the Germans to pass over into Gaul against his consent, why did he claim that anything beyond the Rhine should be subject to his dominion or power? The Ubii also, who alone out of all the nations lying beyond the Rhine, had sent ambassadors to Kaiser and formed an alliance and given hostages, earnestly entreated that he would bring them assistance because they were grievously oppressed by the Suevi, or, if he was prevented from doing so by the business of the Commonwealth, he would at least transport his army over the Rhine, that that would be sufficient for their present assistance and their hope for the future, that so great was the name and the reputation of his army, even among the most remote nations of the Germans, arising from the defeat of Ariovistus and this last battle which was fought, that they might be safe under the fame and friendship of the Roman people. They promised a large number of ships for transporting the army. Chapter 17. Kaiser, for those reasons which I have mentioned, had resolved to cross the Rhine. But to cross by ships he neither deemed to be sufficiently safe, nor considered consistent with his own dignity and that of the Roman people. Therefore, although the greatest difficulty in forming a bridge was presented to him, on account of the breadth, rapidity, and depth of the river, he nevertheless considered that it ought to be attempted by him, or that his army ought not otherwise to be led over. He devised this plan of a bridge. He joined together at a distance of 2 feet, 2 piles, each a foot and a half thick, sharpened a little at the lower end, and proportioned in length to the depth of the river. After he had, by means of engines, sunk these into the river, and fixed them at the bottom, and then driven them in with rammers, not quite perpendicularly like a stake, but bending forward and sloping, so as to decline in the direction of the current of the river, he also placed 2 other piles opposite to these, at the distance of 40 feet lower down, fastened together in the same manner, but directed against the force and current of the river. Both these, moreover, were kept firmly apart by beams 2 feet thick, the space which the binding of the piles occupied, laid in at their extremities between 2 braces on each side, and in consequence of these being in different directions and fastened on sides the one opposite to the other, so great was the strength of the work, and such the arrangement of the materials, that in proportion to the greater body of water dashed against the bridge, so much the closer were its parts held fastened together. These beams were bound together by timber laid over them in the direction of the length of the bridge, and were then covered over with laths and hurdles. And, in addition to this, piles were driven into the water obliquely, at the lower side of the bridge, and these serving as buttresses, and being connected with every portion of the work, sustained the force of the stream. And there were others also above the bridge, at a moderate distance, that if trunks of trees or vessels were floated down the river by the barbarians for the purpose of destroying the work, the violence of such things might be diminished by these defenses, and might not injure the bridge. Chapter 18. Within 10 days after the timber began to be collected, the whole work was completed, and the whole army led over. Kaiser, leaving a strong guard at each end of the bridge, hastens into the territories of the Sigambri. In the meantime, ambassadors from several nations come to him, whom, on their suing for peace and alliance, he answers in a courteous manner, and orders hostages be brought to him. But the Sigambri, at the very time the bridge was begun to be built, made preparations for a flight, by the advice of such of the Tencteri and Usipetes as they had amongst them, and quitted their territories and conveyed away all their possessions, and concealed themselves in deserts and woods. Chapter 19. Kaisar, having remained in their territories a few days, and burnt all their villages and houses, and cut down their corn, proceeded into the territories of the Ubii, and, having promised them his assistance if they were ever harassed by the Suevi, he learned from them these particulars. That the Suevi, after they had by means of their scouts found that the bridge was being built, had called a council, according to their custom, and sent orders to all parts of their state to remove from the towns and convey their children, wives, and all their possessions into the woods, and that all who could bear arms should assemble in one place. That the place thus chosen was nearly the center of those regions which the Suevi possessed. That in this spot they had resolved to await the arrival of the Romans, and give them battle there. When Kaisar discovered this, having already accomplished all those things on account of which he had resolved to lead his army over, namely to strike fear into the Germans, take vengeance on the Sigambri, and free the Ubii from the invasion of the Suevi, having spent altogether 18 days beyond the Rhine, and thinking he had advanced far enough to serve both honor and interest, he returned into Gaul and cut down the bridge. Chapter 22. During the short part of summer which remained, Kaisar, although in these countries, as all Gaul lies towards the north, the winters are early, nevertheless resolved to proceed into Britain, because he discovered that in almost all the wars with the Gauls, succors had been furnished to our enemy from that country. And, even if the time of year should be insufficient for carrying on the war, yet he thought it would be of great service to him if he only entered the island and saw into the character of the people, and got knowledge of their localities, harbors, and landing places, all which were for the most part unknown to the Gauls. For neither does any one except merchants generally go thither, nor even to them was any portion of it known, except the sea coast and those parts which are opposite to Gaul. Therefore, after having called up to him the merchants from all parts, he could learn neither what was the size of the island, nor what or how numerous were the nations which inhabited it, nor what system of war they followed, nor what customs they used, nor what harbors were convenient for a great number of large ships. Chapter 21. He sends before him Caius Volusenus with a ship of war to acquire a knowledge of these particulars before he in person should make a descent into the island, as he was convinced that this was a judicious measure. He commissioned him to thoroughly examine into all matters, and then return to him as soon as possible. He himself proceeds to the Morini with all his forces. He orders ships from all parts of the neighboring countries, and the fleet which the preceding summer he had built for the war with the Veneti, to assemble in this place. In the meantime, his purpose having been discovered and reported to the Britons by merchants, ambassadors came to him from several states of the island, to promise that they will give hostages and submit to the government of the Roman people. Having given them an audience, he, after promising liberally and exhorting them to continue in that purpose, sends them back to their own country, and dispatches with them Commius, whom, after subduing the Atrebates, he had created king there, a man whose courage and conduct he esteemed, and who he thought would be faithful to him, and whose influence ranked highly in those countries. He orders him to visit as many states as he could and persuade them to embrace the protection of the Roman people, and apprise them that he would shortly come thither. Volusenus, having viewed the localities as far as means could be afforded one who dared not leave his ship and trust himself to barbarians, returns to Kaisar on the fifth day and reports what he had there observed. Chapter 22. While Kaisar remains in these parts for the purpose of procuring ships, ambassadors come to him from a great portion of the Morini, to plead their excuse respecting their conduct on the late occasion, alleging that it was as men uncivilized, and as those who were unacquainted with our custom, that they had made war upon the Roman people, and promising to perform what he should command Kaisar, thinking that this had happened fortunately enough for him, because he had neither wished to leave an enemy behind him, nor had an opportunity for carrying on a war, by reason of such time of the year, nor considered that employment in such trifling matters was to be preferred to his enterprise on Britain, imposes a large number of hostages, and when these were brought, he received them to his protection. Having collected together and provided about 80 transport ships, as many as he thought necessary for conveying over 2 legions, he assigned such ships of war as he had besides to the quaestor, his lieutenants, and officers of cavalry. There were, in addition to these 18 ships of burden which were prevented, 8 miles from that place, by winds, from being able to reach the same port. These he distributed amongst the horse. The rest of the army he delivered to Q. Titurius Sabinus and L. Arunculius Cotta, his lieutenants, to lead into the territories of the Menapii and those cantons of the Morini from which ambassadors had not come to him. He ordered P. Sulpicius Rufus, his lieutenant, to hold possession of the harbor with such a garrison as he thought sufficient. Chapter 23. These matters being arranged, finding the weather favorable for his voyage, he set sail about the third watch, and ordered the horse to march forward to the farther port, and there embark and follow him. As this was performed rather tardily by them, he himself reached Britain with the first few squadrons of ships, about the 4th hour of the day, and there saw the forces of the enemy drawn up in arms on all the hills. The nature of the place was this. The sea was confined by mountains so close to it that a dart could be thrown from their summit upon the shore. Considering this by no means a fit place for disembarking, he remained at anchor till the 9th hour for the other ships to arrive there. Having in the meantime assembled the lieutenants and military tribunes, he told them both what he had learnt from Volusenus and what he wished to be done, and enjoined them, as the principal of military matters, and especially as maritime affairs, which have a precipitate and uncertain action required, that all things should be performed by them at a nod and at an instant. Having dismissed them, meeting both with wind and tide favorable at the same time, the signal being given and the anchor weighted, he advanced about 7 miles from that place, and stationed his fleet over against an open and level shore. Chapter 24. But the barbarians, upon perceiving the design of the Romans, sent forward their cavalry and charioteers, a class of warriors of whom it is their practice to make great use in their battles, and following with the rest of their forces, endeavored to prevent our men landing. In this was the greatest difficulty, for the following reasons. Namely, because our ships, on account of their great size, could be stationed only in deep water, and our soldiers, in places unknown to them, with their hands embarrassed, oppressed with a large and heavy weight of armor, had at the same time to leap from the ships, stand amidst the waves, and encounter the enemy, whereas they, either on dry ground or advancing a little way into the water, free in all their limbs in places thoroughly known to them, could confidently throw their weapons and spur on their horses, which were accustomed to this kind of service. Dismayed by these circumstances, and altogether untrained in this mode of battle, our men did not at all exert the same vigor and eagerness which they had been wont to exert in engagements on dry ground. Chapter 25. When Caesar observed this, he ordered the ships of war, the appearance of which was somewhat strange to the barbarians and the motion more ready for service, to be withdrawn a little from the transport vessels, and to be propelled by their oars, and be stationed towards the open flank of the enemy, and the enemy to be beaten off and driven away with slings, arrows, and engines, which plan was of great service to our men, for the barbarians being startled by the form of our ships and the motions of our oars and the nature of our engines, which was strange to them, stopped, and shortly after retreated a little. And while our men were hesitating, whether they should advance to the shore, chiefly on account of the depth of the sea, he who carried the eagle of the 10th Legion, after supplicating the gods that the matter might turn out favorably to the Legion, exclaimed, "Leap, fellow soldiers, unless you wish to betray your eagle to the enemy. I, for my part, will perform my duty to the Commonwealth and my general." When he had said this with a loud voice, he leaped from the ship and proceeded to bear the eagle toward the enemy. Then our men, exhorting one another that so great a disgrace should not be incurred, all leaped from the ship. When those in the nearest vessels saw them, they speedily followed and approached the enemy. Chapter 26. The battle was maintained vigorously on both sides. Our men, however, as they could neither keep their ranks, nor get firm footing, nor follow their standards, and as one from one ship and another from another assembled around whatever standards they met, were thrown into great confusion. But the enemy, who were acquainted with all the shallows, when from the shore they saw any coming from a ship one by one, spurred on their horses and attacked them while embarrassed. Many surrounded a few, others threw their weapons upon our collected forces on their exposed flank. When Kaiser observed this, he ordered the boats of the ships of war and the spy sloops to be filled with soldiers, and sent them up to the succor of those whom he had observed in distress. Our men, as soon as they made good their footing on dry ground, and all their comrades had joined them, made an attack upon the enemy, and put them to flight, but could not pursue them very far, because the horse had not been able to maintain their course at sea and reach the island. This alone was wanting to Kaiser's accustomed success. Chapter 27. The enemy being thus vanquished in battle, as soon as they recovered after their flight, instantly sent ambassadors to Kaiser to negotiate about peace. They promised to give hostages and perform what he should command. Together with these ambassadors came Commius the Atrebatian, who, as I have above said, has been sent by Kaiser into Britain. Him they had seized upon when leaving his ship, although in the character of ambassador he bore the general's commission to them, and thrown into chains. Then, after the battle was fought, they sent him back, and in suing for peace cast the blame of that act upon the common people, and entreated that it might be pardoned on account of their indiscretion. Kaiser, complaining that after they had sued for peace and had voluntarily sent ambassadors into the continent for that purpose, they had made war without a reason, said that he would pardon their indiscretion, and imposed hostages, a part of whom they gave immediately. The rest they said they would give in a few days, since they were sent for from remote places. In the meantime, they ordered their people to return to the country parts, and the chiefs assembled from all quarters, and proceeded to surrender themselves and their states to Kaiser. Chapter 28. A peace having been established by those proceedings 4 days after we had come into Britain, the 18 ships, to which reference has been made above, and which conveyed the cavalry, set sail from the upper port with a gentle gale. When, however, they were approaching Britain and were seen from the camp, so great a storm suddenly arose that none of them could maintain their course at sea, and some were taken back to the same port from which they had started. Others, to their great danger, were driven to the lower part of the island, nearer to the west, which, however, after having cast anchor as they were getting filled with water, put out to sea through necessity in a stormy night, and made for the continent. Chapter 29. It happened that night to be full moon, which usually occasions very high tides in that ocean, and that circumstance was unknown to our men. Thus, at the same time, the tide began to fill the ships of war which Kaiser had provided to convey over his army, and which he had drawn up on the strand, and the storm began to dash the ships of burden which were riding at anchor against each other. Nor was any means afforded our men of either managing them or of rendering any service. A great many ships having been wrecked, inasmuch as the rest, having lost their cables, anchors, and other tackling, were unfit for sailing, a great confusion, as would necessarily happen, arose throughout the army. For there were no other ships in which they could be conveyed back, and all things which are of service in repairing the vessels were wanting, and corn for the winter had not been provided in those places, because it was understood by all that they would certainly winter in Gaul. Chapter 30. On discovering these things, the chiefs of Britain, who had come up after the battle was fought to perform those conditions which Kaiser had imposed, held a conference, when they perceived that cavalry and the ships and corn were wanting to the Romans, and discovered that a small number of our soldiers from the small extent of the camp, which too was on this account more limited than ordinary, because Kaiser had conveyed over his legions without baggage, and thought that the best plan was to renew the war, and cut off our men from corn and provisions, and protract the affair till winter, because they felt confident that if they were vanquished or cut off from a return, no one would afterwards pass over into Britain for the purpose of making war. Therefore, again entering into a conspiracy, they began to depart from the camp by degrees and secretly bring up their people from the country parts.